I love that movie. Does anybody know what movie that is? Indiana Jones. Which one? The Last Crusade. That is one of my favorite movies. It's a movie I grew up watching when I was sick as a kid. It's that movie that you put on when you didn't feel good and you had your chicken noodle soup and you just watched that movie. I love it. And here's why I love that movie and that scene in particular. Because Indiana Jones is about Harrison Ford, right? This guy in the hat, the guy with the leather jacket, the guy with the whip. Unfortunately, I know there's a few people here that haven't seen this movie. I know Dan hasn't seen it. I like to give him a hard time about this movie because it's so fantastic. Jess, too. But the thing about that movie is in that scene, you didn't see Harrison Ford. Instead, you saw Indiana Jones as a teenager. You saw him as running on his one of his first great adventures, and he falls into that train car with a lion in it. And in a moment, he grabs the whip off the wall, and he cracks it. And in that instant, he becomes Harrison Ford. He becomes Indiana Jones. It's as if his life had been going this one direction, and this one moment changed his life. He became a different person. He went a different path. All of our lives are like that in many ways. Sometimes there are very noticeable changes that happen in our lives, very key events, things like graduating high school or college or getting married or having our first kid. It's a moment where we can't go back to who we used to be, but instead we have to go forward because we're somebody different. Our life has taken a different direction. The series that we started last week, Jason Malik introduced us to this concept of the journey. This idea that as Christians, we are on this path that has ups and downs in these different stages, and sometimes it's directed by some very huge life-changing moments in our life, moments that we can look back to and say, that's the instant when everything changed. Last week, Jason introduced us to Peter and his very first step. It was the step where he literally stepped out of this boat that he had been fishing in, and he decided to follow Jesus. Peter's life changed that day. Over the next several years, Peter followed Jesus, and he saw Jesus do amazing things that the scriptures say. Jesus healed sick people. He fed thousands of people with crumbs. He got the lame people able to walk. He was able to calm storms with just a word or two. And Peter, the Bible says, even saw Jesus raise people from the dead. Now, those are some pretty crazy stories. And you might be somebody here tonight and you hear those stories and you've heard them taught or you've read the Bible a little bit and you don't quite believe it yet. You have some doubts. You have some questions. And if that's you, we want you to know that we're super glad you're here. New Denver is a place full of people with questions. We're a place full of people with doubts. Because if there's anything about this Christian journey that many of us are on, it's that throughout every stage of our journey, there's new questions. There's new challenges. And here at New Denver, we want to be a place where you can interact with those biggest questions. A couple weeks ago, we had a service called Frequently Asked Questions. Dan and Jason facilitated it, and we tried to answer some of the questions that our community has as best we can. But we also want to be a place that does that regularly. So if you have some doubts and you have some questions, first, we're glad you're here, but also get to know us. Get to know people around you. Have coffee. Express who you are. Don't slap a smile on your face. Don't pretend you know everything, but be willing to interact with some of your doubts. And we'll be talking about those a little bit tonight. Others here tonight have been following Jesus maybe for a long time. And you hear these stories, and you can actually believe it because you've seen God do some crazy things in your life too. I know there's some people here that have been living lives of addiction or just stuck in certain places, and when they got to know Jesus, their life radically changed directions. Other people, it's not quite so drastic. Other people, a little more like me, just have had this internal change in their life. It's slow but steady, but they see that God's influence slowly makes them into a different person. I grew up in a church in Iowa. Not specifically, I didn't grow up in the church, but I might as well have because I spent a lot of time there. And from a very early age, I bought in to this church thing. I believed in Jesus. And obviously, when I was 4 years old, I didn't have that crazy of a lifestyle to change from. But as I got to know Jesus, as I got to know Jesus more and more, I've seen his impact on my life. in some really, really remarkable ways. I've known Jesus since I've been about 4 years old, and so now I've been following Jesus for over 20 years, and my life has had ups and downs in this journey, in this process. I've had some moments I'm really proud of and some moments I wish I could have done differently. And why is that? It's because following Jesus is a relationship. In many ways, it's like my relationship with Hillary, my wife. Hillary and I met when we were about 16 years old, and we went to each other's proms, and we got married in college, and I was 20, and she was 21. So we were really young. We were really naive. We lived in some university housing that was crummy. It had, the floor was about as good as the floor underneath your feet. It was about $400 a month, and it was this dump. But we were young, and we were in love, and we had a great time. 6 months ago, we discovered that we're expecting our first child. Yeah, we're really excited. Baby's coming in February if all works well. And so clearly our life, our relationship has changed. We're a little different people than when we were 17 years old. We're different people than when we were 6 months ago. Our life has ups and downs. And as we've gotten to know each other more and more, we know each other in deeper and deeper ways. We have a whole list that we could probably make of inside jokes just over the years of knowing each other. We can have conversations just by looking at each other or a couple words that are really deep and profound. But also, there's days where we miscommunicate a little bit. Everybody has those moments where I didn't understand that she wanted me to do the dishes. Or maybe I missed something really, really important and I just wasn't paying attention. Our relationship has had ups and downs. The deeper we've gotten to know each other, the more we've realized there is to know. Our relationship with God is just like that. The more we get to know God, the more we realize there is to know. And as we started with, studying Peter last week with Jason, we started this journey where we saw that Peter had some of these really high moments early on. Peter had these moments where he was Jesus' number one guy. He was like that kid, if you've ever gone to a museum and you've gone on one of those tours, he's that kid in the front that has to stay right next to the tour guide and is always asking questions and knows all the answers and wants to spit it out. Peter was just like that. He was Jesus' main guy. And so in some moments, Peter was at the top of the world. There's a story in the Bible where Jesus is walking on the water and Peter is brave enough to step out towards Jesus. He showed that he had enough faith that Jesus was going to take care of him. And you can just see Jesus going, "Yes, Peter, you got it." And then there's some other moments in the Bible where Peter misunderstood something or Peter got ahead of himself. And Jesus had to say, "No, Peter, that's not quite right. Start over. Try again." Tonight we're going to look at one of those seasons in Peter's life. I think it's probably the darkest season in Peter's life. It's probably the moment where Peter had the most questions and misunderstood God the very most. So if you have your Bible, or you can grab one in the pews, we're going to look in Matthew 26. And in a minute, it'll be on the screen. But before we do that, let me tell you a little bit about where we are in the story tonight. So here in the story, Jesus has had these disciples. Peter and these men have been following Jesus for 3 years. And they've been doing crazy things. Jesus has preached to thousands of people at times, and there's these big crowds following Jesus, and these disciples had seen Jesus do some of the most remarkable miracles they could ever imagine. As these large crowds followed Jesus, certain people in the community got a little uncomfortable. Jesus attracted some of the poor people, some of the people that were a little disenfranchised, the people that wanted life to be a little different. And Jesus would point sometimes to the people in power and he'd say, "You're a hypocrite. You need to change. Things can't be how they are. God wants a kingdom that's different than how it's ran now." So Jesus had stepped on a few toes, just like in every other society when the people in power feel threatened. They feel like they need to do something to keep their power, to keep the status quo. So the people in power found a disciple of Jesus's, a man named Judas that you might have known, and they paid him off, and they said, bring us to Jesus some night when he's all alone, when there's not thousands of people around him. We'll get rid of him. And this is where we pick up the story in verse 47. And when he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had arranged a sign with them. The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him. Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, greetings, Rabbi, and kissed him. Jesus replied, do what you came for, friend. Then the men stepped forward and seized Jesus and arrested him. With that, one of Jesus' companions reached for his sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Another one of the Gospels that describes this story names that disciple. His name's Peter, which is fitting because we're talking about Peter tonight. And here in this moment, Judas has brought these soldiers to this garden where Jesus is hanging out with some of his disciples, and they arrest Jesus. And Peter pulls out his sword and he says, no! He strikes at him. He says, no, you're not going to take Jesus. He said, this man I've been following for 3 years. I've seen him do unimaginable things. Jesus is something else. Jesus is going to change the world. I'm giving my life for him. I love Jesus so much, I will die to protect him. The story continues, though, in verse 52. Jesus says, put your sword back in its place. Jesus said to him, for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think that I cannot call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen this way? In that hour, Jesus said to the crowd, am I leading a rebellion that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I sat in the temple courts teaching, and you did not arrest me. But this has all taken place that the writings of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples deserted him and fled. So Peter, he had just struck at this servant of the high priest. He was ready to die for Jesus. He thought this was his shining moment where he was going to show Jesus how much he loved him and how faithful of a follower he was. And Jesus said, no, Peter, that's not it. I'm not who you think I am right now. These expectations you have are wrong. I'm not coming to be that kind of leader. Peter had put himself out there, was ready to give his life, and Jesus swats him down and says, no, Peter, stop. You're wrong. I bet in that moment, Peter was pretty confused. He'd been following Jesus for over 3 years, and he thought he had Jesus figured out. He thought he knew Jesus was and what Jesus was about, and he was ready to die for him. And here Jesus was saying, Peter, almost everything you believe right now is wrong. I'm not who you think I am right now. I have a similar experience in my life. When Hiller and I moved here to Colorado a couple years ago to attend seminary, we didn't want to come. Seminary was the last thing on my list of things I wanted to do, but as our options closed, God made it more and more clear to us that we needed to move here to Colorado to attend seminary. So, like any good seminary student, we started making some deals with God. And maybe you've made some of these in parts of your life. We told God that we'd come to school if he paid for all of the courses and took care of us. It's, you know, a pretty good bet to make. And so I applied for scholarships like you're supposed to, got them in on time, and had faith that God would provide. And when the letters came back, we got some scholarship money, but it wasn't nearly enough to cover it. So, okay, that's fine. So we decided to move here to Colorado a few months early so we could look for work. I looked for jobs. Hillary looked for jobs. And after 1 month, and after 2 months, and after 3 months, work wasn't coming in. I couldn't find anything, and the jobs that Hillary found, they didn't pay a whole lot. In fact, they paid less than what we had been making in Iowa. So we started to get a little nervous. We started to say, God, what's happening? We thought you called us to come here. We signed up for this because this is what you wanted for us. We made a deal, right? One of those days, I walked out to my car, and I noticed that my 2002 Ford Escape, that always runs pretty roughly anyways, had a flat tire. So a little frustrated, I put the spare on and drove it to Walmart to get them to look at it and to try to patch the tire. And after wandering around the electronics section, like I always do when I wait for things, they called me back, and they told me they couldn't patch my tire. And they proceeded to tell me that it was a nail or a screw, and it had punctured part of the tire too close to the sidewall, and they couldn't safely patch it, they told me. So I'd have to buy a new tire. And not only that, because I drove a four-wheel drive vehicle, I needed four tires. Because on a four-wheel drive vehicle, you're not supposed to have one tire that's different size than the others because it's hard on the mechanics of the car. And so instead of giving me a $20 bill, they gave me an estimate for $500. Now, I don't know about you, but $500 is a lot of money to me, especially when we had no job, especially when we didn't know how we were paying for school. And I drove home that day with the spare tire still on it because I wasn't ready to pay that, with my fingers a little more tight around the steering wheel. The windows were rolled up and the radio was off, and I cried out to God. I yelled at God. I said, God, what is this? What's happening here? It wasn't just this tire. It was this whole experience. God, why did you bring us here only to abandon us? We had these different expectations of who you were. We thought you were going to take care of us in ways, but now you're not. Where are you, God? For a moment there, I felt like God might have betrayed us, that he led us out here only to abandon us. I bet Peter felt pretty similar that night, that Peter had given his life following Jesus to a much larger extent than I ever have, and Peter felt that all of a sudden, Jesus had turned his back on him, maybe. It must have been heartbreaking. So he fled. And he hid with the other disciples as they carted Jesus off. Unfortunately for Peter, that's not where this evening ends for him. His night actually got a whole lot darker. We're going to start again reading in verse 69. And here in this passage, Peter's been following Jesus at a distance. He's been trying to see what's happening, making sure that maybe Jesus is going to, maybe Jesus will Jesus juke this situation and actually do something marvelous, and Peter wants to see it. But as the night goes on, it becomes clear that Jesus is going to die. So in verse 69 it reads, "Now Peter was sitting in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. 'You are with Jesus of Galilee,' she said. 'But he denied it before them all.' 'I don't know what you're talking about,' he said. Then he went to the gateway where another servant girl saw him and said to the people there, 'This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth.' He denied it again with an oath, 'I don't know the man.' After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, 'Surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away.' Then he began to call down curses and swore to them, 'I don't know the man.' Immediately a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken, 'Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times.' And he went outside and wept bitterly." Peter went outside and wept bitterly. In one night, Peter had went from being Jesus' number one guy, the guy that was literally willing to pull out a sword against trained soldiers and fight them to the death to protect Jesus. That's how closely he followed Jesus. And just a few hours later, he couldn't even tell a servant girl that he knew who Jesus was. Certainly Peter was confused. Certainly Peter had had this evening where everything he believed seemed to get turned upside down. And maybe he was exhausted, maybe he was just confused, but before he knew it, he himself was turning his back on his friend, his Lord, his master that he'd been following for 3 years. And he went outside and wept in shame, wept in guilt. And he hid in the shadows as they took Jesus away and nailed him to a tree. If I was Peter, I know what I would have wanted to do. I'm a runner. When difficulty comes to me, my first reaction is to want to disappear, want to find people that don't know who I am, don't know my story. If I was Peter, I would have wanted to change my name and move to a town far away where I could hide in my shame and people wouldn't know who I had been. Peter does something different, though. Something that amazes me. You might be in a situation like Peter, though. Maybe you're in one of these two places. Maybe you're in a spot where God hasn't come through in the way that you've expected. Like when Hillary and I moved here to Colorado, we thought God was going to take care of all the bills for us. And he's been faithful, but it hasn't been in the ways that we anticipated. Or maybe you yourself are looking for a job or moved here for a job or have been waiting for that promotion that you thought was going to come and it hasn't come yet. Maybe you're single. There's a lot of single people here. And it's hard. Sometimes you wonder, God, when are you going to bring that person around? When are you going to bring that person into my life? There's some families here, I know, that have had troubles in the past having children. And for long parts of your life, you just go saying, God, where are you? We expected that you would provide, that you'd give us a child, or you'd make our family this certain way, and it's not coming. Have you abandoned us? Where are you? God, do I even know you? It's a dark season of your life to be in. And others of us are in this season of our life where we feel like we've let God down, right? We feel like maybe we've done this one sin or we haven't been the person that we promised we would be to God. Yeah, our friends and our family and the people closest to us might not even know. We might be really good at smiling and coming to church and pretending like everything's okay, but deep down, you have this shame and this guilt, and you think that maybe God never could love you again. Or maybe God could never forgive you for this or that. And there was this wall between you and God. Peter had both those experiences that night. And again, instead of running, he did something very different. And I think we can learn a lot from this, because as a Christian, or even as somebody who's not a Christian, you're going to enter into dark seasons of your life where you don't know what to believe anymore. And Peter can teach us a lot about what to do in these situations. In a moment, we're going to read from Luke 24, so you can start turning there now. In this part of the story, we've seen that the disciples, despite Jesus dying, have continued to get together. They hide behind these doors and they lock them, probably because they wonder if the soldiers are going to come to their door and drag them away next, just to make sure that this Jesus thing is done. And so they're hiding in these shadows, and Peter's with them, and they're hiding and they're terrified, and they have these questions and these doubts that they don't know the answers to. One of these times, the women in their midst are the brave ones. While the men are hiding, it's a few women that go out to the tomb of Jesus to cry over the tomb and to bring flowers. And one of these times, they go out to this tomb, and they come back, and they're pale, and they're shaking, and they can't quite express what has happened. But all they can say is, Jesus is gone. Luke 24, verse 9. That's where the story continues. It says, when they came back from the tomb, when the women came back, they told all these things to the 11, that is the disciples, and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. How could Jesus be gone? Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw strips of linen, the clothes Jesus had been buried in, laying by themselves. And he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. Peter did two things. In the darkest season of his life, in the season where God seemed distant, or he believed that he could never make right again with God, Peter did two things. First, he kept showing up. He kept hanging out with these people that loved him, these men and women who had been with him for these last years, who had seen Peter at some of his best times and some of his worst times. Peter hung out with the people that had seen God work powerfully in him. He kept coming. He kept showing up. Even though he had doubts, even though he might have felt like the biggest fraud. The second thing we saw in this story is Peter kept investigating. He had questions. He had doubts. He didn't know what he quite believed anymore, I'm sure, but he kept coming. He kept seeking. He kept searching to the point that when there was rumors that Jesus had disappeared, he ran to try to learn what had happened. There's probably people here tonight that are in a similar season of your life. And again, we're really glad you're here, because we're a place for people with doubts. We want to be a place that allows people like Peter to respond like people like Peter did. We want to be a place that opens our doors, that lets people with questions and these doubts come in. We meet here on Sunday nights. We want to have coffee with people that have doubts. We want these people in our missional communities, our groups that meet throughout the city of Denver, that are our extended family. We want people to be all of themselves when they come to us. Whether they're hurting, whether they have doubts, whether they have questions, we want to be a place where they can come and investigate and seek. That's who we are at New Denver. That night when Peter betrayed God and when Peter felt confused about who God was, Jesus died for him. Jesus died for Peter, who told slaves that he didn't know who Jesus was. Jesus died for you and me, even though we have doubts, even though we have questions sometimes, even though we don't always know exactly what we believe, even though we're in a stage of our life where we don't know when it's going to end, where we don't know when God's going to come through in the ways that we expect. Jesus died for us. That night, Jesus also did one other thing. It happened before all of these events had happened that we've studied tonight. And it's very human. Jesus ate dinner with these men. And as Jesus ate dinner, he picked up the bread off the table and he held it and he broke it. And he told them, "This is my body broken for you." And he picked up the glass on the table and he said, "This is my blood poured out for you." Now, if I was a disciple, I probably would have been sitting at the table wondering, "Jesus, that's kind of weird. We're not cannibals. What's happening? What does that mean?" I'm sure they had all kinds of questions, but they just kind of, "Okay, Jesus." But let me tell you what. After that night, and the nights the disciples continued to get back together, the nights that they continued to eat together, they ate the bread and they drank the wine and they remembered Jesus. They remembered what he said. They remembered what he had promised them. They remembered who he was. There were disciples there with questions. There were disciples there with doubts. There were disciples like Peter that sometimes felt like they were the biggest frauds ever, but they continued to come together as a community to remember Jesus. I think maybe Jesus gave us this meal to remember him, even when times are tough, even when we have questions, even when the season of our life we can't make sense of. In a minute, Scott and the band are going to come up and they're going to lead us through a couple songs. And I encourage you to sit during that first song and quiet your heart and listen for what God might be saying to you tonight. When you're ready, if you're comfortable, we invite you to come up and in remembrance of who Jesus was, in remembrance of his promises, you can rip off a piece of the bread and dip it in either the wine or the juice. and eat it and remember. Remember Jesus. Remember who he was. Remember what the word says about him. Remember the promises he has made you. He will come back. He will right all wrongs. He will come back. Let us pray. Jesus, we love you. And God, I know in my own heart, and in the hearts of many people here, we have questions, we have doubts, we have things that we don't quite understand, Lord, but we thank you that you love us and that you died for us anyways. God, we thank you that you're a big God and that you are okay with our questions. Help us to continue to meet together. Help us to continue to investigate. Help us to continue to press in. And God, for those of us here that are not in such a dark season of our lives, help us to be guides. Help us to love people who are in dark seasons. God, we trust you and we love you. In your precious name, Lord. Amen.